Hello and welcome to the Human Condition podcast on Resilience Radio. I'm Lee Hatcher. I'm in conversation with Lynn Worsley, clinical psychologist and director of the Resilience Centre, marking the 20th anniversary of the centre, spearheaded by Lynn. I thought it was a good excuse for a rare and rather revealing look back on the journey that Lynn herself has taken to this point in her life, her career, and the important work of the Resilience Centre.
It's quite a sort of a history that basically means I've learnt to wear a lot of hats. So beginning of my career, I took on nursing and I worked at Hornsby Hospital, did a nursing certificate in those days, and I worked in a number of different wards. The wards that I particularly liked working with was mental health, go figure.
Yes.
And the other one was in paediatrics. So I finished nursing, worked for probably 12 months afterwards, full-time in cardiology at Concord Hospital. I really enjoyed that. I think one of the best things about nursing was that I learnt what really made people recover well. And a lot of times it was those connections that people had around the bedside that helped them to recover well and to really connect with them on an individual basis myself.
So you're saying that there was almost a physical connection with a person's health,
yes,
and well-being,
yes,
in how they were kind of cared for?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Beyond medicine?
Absolutely.
Or surgery?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the key things about my training was that at the time we brought in what you call total patient care. So whatever stage you were at in your nursing certificate, because it was in hospital training at those days, you did the total patient care. So you went from, you know, making their beds and cleaning up their bedside table and cleaning the bed pans and so on and sponge bathing, to giving their medication, doing the ward rounds with the doctor and actually helping them to understand their treatment plan. Now, that's big. That's, you know, that you might have only been given about five patients at a time, but you would do everything for them. Whereas, you know, now we have, you know, almost like people, you know, we've got someone to do the bedpans, we've got someone to do the washing of the bed, we've got someone to manage the wash, and then, you know, someone else does the drug round.
Yes,
it's sort of separated that out.
Fragmented.
Yeah, but that to me meant that I got to know my people.
So it wasn't enough for you to stay there because you were clearly doing a great job totally caring for patients. Why psychology? And how psychology?
Well, I had a baby. So I had maternity leave and we didn't have enough money for me to take time off. And so I was employed as a childcare director because I had a nursing qualification.
Okay.
So I worked in a little centre and I took my baby with me. It was a really good experience for me, and I realised then that I just loved working with children, and I loved working with the developmental side, helping them develop through the stages and working with the parents. So at that point I thought, oh, maybe I'll go and do a degree at uni and do maybe education. I thought maybe I could run a childcare centre with an education degree. And so I did that. I did a major in education. And just before I finished, I chose a subject in psychology because I was making up my points. And the first time in my life, I got an A.
The first time?
The first time. I had been studying science, really? And nursing and, you know, I think in my HSC I did so many science subjects. I hadn't really done many humanities. And so this was a really good experience for me. And I thought, oh, well, I'll do another subject.
We'll
I'll just add
that.
Another one. And
yeah.
I got another A. And then I thought, oh, I'll just do another one.
I must be good at this.
Yes. And by end of it, I ended up with a major in education and a major in psychology and an extremely large hex bill to count for that.
She's probably still paying off.
Probably. But it was very rewarding to have that developmental side of psychology, you know, by having the education side. And that became for me a turning point where I actually got into an honours degree in psychology. And from then, a master's in clinical psych and a PhD. So that became a pathway to absolutely studying my passion.
And under the psychology umbrella, you could do no end of things.
Yeah.
Why resilience?
It's my
sweet
space.
Spot.
But when I started psychology, it was really annoying because they studied all the problems. they got excited about studying and the diagnosis of the problems and looking at what the problems were doing and analyzing the problems and then looking at more risk factors for making more problems. And to me, that was like, no, I've been working with children all this time. I've been working as a youth worker as well. I don't look at the problems. I look at what they're doing that's working.
Yes.
And when I've been working in a hospital, I work at what's working. How are they healing? I look for signs of healing in order to build on that healing. And to me, it was like this is back to front. And I was a little bit alone in that because I had to write essays according to the problems and so on.
And then, depressing.
Yeah. And then I picked up doing solution-focused approach. And a solution-focused approach says when you have the light rather than the darkness, it means you aim towards where you want to go rather than look at where you've just come from.
Okay.
To me, that's a no-brainer. But in psychology, it was a new and emerging area. We have now the positive psychology movement and
yes.
so on. But when I first started, I was very much an advocate that was on my own in looking at what works.
That's still different a bit, I think,
definitely.
From resilience. Yeah. What is about resilience that so kind of lit your fire,
well,
floated
what,
your boat?
What has happened with resilience is that when I've picked up with resilience, I've then really looked at what is the definition of resilience. So I went and studied a lot more and in that process realised that resilience isn't necessarily about an internal quality. It's not about a personality trait.
Okay.
It's about the way you navigate and negotiate with the resources around you and how you manage to build your competence in that process as well as go through tough times. So having this combination of those three areas, you know, building resources, navigating and negotiating, taking the skills that build that and then helping people to reconnect in their difficulties became a passion. What we've discovered is that everybody has a capacity, and no matter what your circumstances, that some people have more access to resources than others, and some people's access to resources, the resources that they have access to, are much more useful.
So you can learn it.
You can learn it, but you can also, if you were particularly with children, if you've got access to resources that abuse you and that don't care for you, or neglect you, you're not going to have the resilience skills.
Okay.
But if you've got resources around you that are really of people who have intentional connections with you, who go all out and that are on your team, you're going to start developing the resiliency skills.
You're listening to the Human Condition Podcast. I'm in conversation with Lynn Worsley, marking the 20th anniversary of the Resilience Centre. I'm always keen for a flesh and blood story about how all this works out in practice, how it does change lives. Here's the story of Cole.
Now, Cole is, he's now passed away, but Cole was a absolutely beautiful man, but he had an extremely awful condition of schizophrenia. And his schizophrenia was such that, he would hear voices, he wouldn't be able to function at times. Now, Cole was living with his mum who had an agoraphobia. Now, those horrible situations meant that he couldn't go out, he was stuck with his the noises in his head, and he wasn't well connected. However, Cole was able to connect to his local church. In his local church, he was able to play drums. When people were able to be on his team, they could see that actually he could play drums and perhaps play with the children for a while because they were a little bit more forgiving if he was offbeat.
Yes, yes.
And they didn't really mind if he said, oh, I've got voices, because they just went, oh, are they gone now? And that was a really lovely experience for Cole. The church were able to support him by saying, how about you play drums for the kids' church? And the kids were able to support him by saying, can you teach us how to play drums? So Cole started to take some kids in and teach them drums on the church drum kit.
Oh, really? Yeah.
So that's what I would call a donut moment.
So you're able to guide him through that whole process.
That's right.
What do you mean by the donut moment for the uninitiated?
The uninitiated, for people who want to know about the resilience donut, that's a whole new podcast again.
Yeah, that's right. And we've got one, actually.
Yes, we have got one. So with the donut moment, it's when you've got three areas of your own strength, of your resources, that connect at one point in time. It's almost like they collide. And so for Cole, he had his community, which was his church. He had his skill, which was his drum. And he also was starting to teach. He wasn't an educator, but he was a good teacher. So that tapped into his education as well. And once he started to do that, everyone started to come on his team. Now, what was interesting, as soon as he started to do that more often, he had no schizophrenic admissions.
Wow.
He didn't have a psychotic episode after he started doing that.
How do you explain that?
I explain it by the very fact that his connections kept him on track. His connections helped him to stay sane. His connections gave him feedback. His connections that were intentional connections, people were on his team, they were able to say, Cole, it's okay, I can't hear the voices, so they mustn't be real.
In a way, it's getting back to kind of where we started, the total care of a person.
The total care of a person.
Yeah.
And it meant that no one was frightened of him. Whereas, you know, quite often people are quite frightened of a mental illness like that. But he was frightened enough, so let alone us being frightened of him as well. So when he had that beautiful connection, that was a point of resilience. Now, that's what I would say Cole was resilient. Cole was resilient when he was able to connect with the three areas of strength. And for him, it had a flow-on effect. So he developed more friendships. He also developed more skills in his drumming. He started to play for the main church. He then also had other connections where he was able to start learning a few more things. He was actually quite a good teacher in the drums.
What did you see it doing for him?
I saw his self-esteem coming back. I saw him feeling that he knew he had people on his team, so he felt more confident. And I also could see that his efficacy or his ability to try new things was there. So while he wasn't working, but he would certainly go and learn how to teach these kids more drum skills, and he started having some little lessons after school the church.
What fun.
It was wonderful.
Yeah.
And I think what we learned from that is that what we're heading for at the moment is an age even more of individualism.
Yes.
You know, we used to go to lectures. Now we can do them individually in our own room, on our own.
In our own dark cave.
In our own dark cave, and we can listen to them. Like we can listen to podcasts
yes.
by ourselves.
How good.
However, we're not going to meet people in those sorts of forums anymore.
See, there are so many connections that we have today, but there are so few real connections.
Yes, yes. We can have the connections, but we're still on our own and we can still switch people off.
Yes.
Or switch the podcast off or on. What we're needing is actually those challenging connections that, you know, like, oh gosh, I've had enough of them now, I need to keep going. Oh, but actually this person really needs to talk to me, so I have to accommodate them. And that becomes a point of learning for me to reflect. And also those connections mean that I start to become on someone else's team and they become on my team. And that becomes a really important part of building our resilience.
Which answers the question, why do you do this? It's become a very significant practice, the Resilience Centre, but it's not just about a business, is it?
It's not about a business.
No.
And the Resilience Centre, I often ask myself, why am I doing this, Lynn?
Because you're busy, aren't you? I'm very busy.
I'm very busy,
yeah.
And I find it very, very difficult at times when I've got so many competing demands. So quite often I will say, you know, why am I doing this? You know, is this about a business? Is this about making money? Is this about, well, I'd like to tell you, it's not about making money, but it is certainly about helping people to connect. And what we have in the Resilience Centre is an incredible amount of talented psychologists and social workers who are here, who are doing work that are driven by their passion. And I think the therapy, we've seen people heal. We've seen people rapidly connect again much faster than they would other times.
Yeah. What do you say that passion is? Passion to do what or be what?
The passion is to help people to connect. The passion is about increasing people's connections.
Okay.
Resilience is about building those connections. And making sure that we're well nested in a team of people who are intentionally connected to us and helping people to see that. Another story is working with children at the moment. I'm seeing more children disappear into their caves with their computers and their computer games.
It's a huge issue.
You'd go past the playgrounds, they're not as full as they used to be. The backyards are not as full as they used to be. And I'm reminded about the story of the Pied Piper. the Pied Piper, where the village lost all their children because the Pied Piper came and they followed the Pied Piper away, and the village lost their kids. And I think in a sense we're heading for that. The Pied Piper is called the computer. The Pied Piper is the computer games and the
device
internet.
The device, yes. That's for adults as well,
absolutely,
not just kids.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. To go to a school concert and see the parents and the kids sitting there on their mobile phones, just sitting in the corner, not even talking about what was in the concert and explaining and talking to others. It's not unusual. So we have a Pied Piper situation, which is going to be the demise of the resilience of our communities. So I'm even more passionate about talking to people about connecting, building their strengths by connecting in certain ways, combining their strengths to thrive. One of the things I'm particularly concerned about is that this building the skills isn't about teaching people about the skills. It's actually helping them to connect in order to build the skills.
Because there's work in this for them, isn't there?
There is work.
This is not just you telling them, do this, do that.
No. And that's why at the Resilience Centre we run groups. You know, we've got a number of different groups that we're trying to work out how to do that. You know, if we really were here for the money, we wouldn't be running groups.
Yes.
But essentially, it's a much faster process, and it also means that people are connecting in that process.
If I know anything about anyone in my life, I know this is not about you. But let me ask you in conclusion, what's this do for you to be involved in this work, other than drive you crazy with business?
Look, I have an enormous gain when I see people connect, and I'm part of that process. It's a really important process for me. I love watching. I'm a great people watcher, so I watch how people connect and observe. I go to a footy match and I'll watch the crowd.
Yeah.
I'm watching the crowd, not the football.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I'm not watching. Just a bit?
Yeah. Well, maybe a little bit. Yeah. But I do watch the crowd for seeing how they connect. And I just, it's a real sense of joy for me when I see the joy of their connections.
Yeah.
And that intentional attachment that occurs and the bonds that occur around those situations. And I guess that's what drives me. That's what gives me, my heart, a real jump for joy.
And I can see the fruit of it in so many lives in this place and beyond. Lynn Worsley, happy anniversary.
Thank you.
And thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Human Condition Podcast. I'm Lee Hatcher. There are lots of other great conversations and resources on the Resilience Centre website, www.theresiliencecentre.com.au.